It's not often we get to dip into some insightful minds where it comes to fixing some of the problems that we have in South Africa and around the world. And when we think about all of the things that we've had conversations around South Africa with this new government, with the new structuring of where South Africa's going and the need for jobs and all these things come up. And every single time we have these conversations, we kind of come back to the point that we need to be creating more opportunities and fostering a healthy working spaces, and entrepreneurship is one such way that we do that. Entrepreneurship is one of the biggest catalysts for growth and development, and also for ending some of the systemic problems we've been looking at. And there is a trust that exists within South Africa that recently had an awards ceremony dedicated to honoring some of the entrepreneurs and the young entrepreneurial minds. That is the South African Futures Trust. They recently had their awards last week, and I'm joined on the line by the trustee of the South African Futures Trust, who also happens to be the executive chair of Oppenheimer Generations, Jonathan Oppenheimer, to take a look at just entrepreneurship and the initiatives that are out there. Good evening, Jonathan. Thank you so much for taking the time. Obviously, entrepreneurship is such an important part of everything that we do in business and in driving economies and driving opportunities going forward. And I want to start with looking at just the importance of the Future Trust Awards that you have in place. Obviously, they are something that holds very close to your heart, but I imagine it goes a little more than just it being about a personal point of impact for you.
100%. And thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about what we're doing. Now, South Africa Future Trust sort of came out of the COVID crisis, where the family really sort of believed that they could make a difference in trying to help South Africa get from where it was before the crisis to somewhere that would at least hold it true for post the crisis. And in a very quick analysis, we identified that entrepreneurship and the small and medium business sector in particular really didn't have a route to access some of the support structures that already existed in South African society, whether it was government grants or UIF from a formal employment perspective. And we were incredibly lucky to work with amazing partners and set up the trust, the South Africa Future Trust, in I think 7 days with government support. And then we literally wrote 10,000 loan agreements in the subsequent 35 working days, supporting 10,000 businesses and 100,000 individuals. And what we were able to do is basically provide a roadmap and income to allow them to transition from those businesses that had been shuttered because of COVID into a world where they could access the government support structures that had existed. And that was just an extraordinary and brilliant project to be part of, and to see the impact it's had on people is just amazing. What's great now, some 5 years nearly, or 4.5 years later, is that all of that money that we extended to those small businesses is beginning to come back, and we've got a whole chunk of it back, and we've been able to reimagine the South Africa Future Trust not simply as a grant making or a financial extension for small businesses in crisis, but actually to now look at what small businesses do so well, which is be the power, the petrol that drives the economy, that creates the jobs, that creates the better future for South Africa that didn't exist yesterday and we need to exist tomorrow. And so Nico Jacobs and his team — Nico joined us nearly a year and a half ago now — have been examining in great detail what it is that makes entrepreneurs successful. How do we create for them a tailwind? How do we create an environment where they have a tailwind rather than the headwind? And then trying to figure out how we provide that tailwind to them. And we've gone about it in a really systematic way, using the money that's coming back from the first iteration of the South African Future Trust. And I got to say, the first go round, the sort of the big work isn't so much seen, and the small work, the enjoyable moment to shine in the sun, is something like the award ceremonies we had last week, where we saw and recognized five extraordinary individual companies that are really making a difference to South Africa. But that's not to say they were the only five. We had three finalists in each category, and there were many, many, many brilliant submissions that didn't make the finalist list. So when you participate in that, you just leave with a sense of true belief that there can be a better future for South Africa tomorrow, if you can just activate and enable this amazing talent that we have in this country to prosper.
Jonathan, as you rightly mentioned, we're not short on talent, but I want to look at the environment that exists here. I mean, there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there that want to be looking towards entrepreneurship as a manner in which to bridge the gaps and to provide for their own families. The local environment, is that an environment that's currently stimulating enough for entrepreneurship if we look at the policies and the support? I mean, there's only so much that you can do as a trust or as one entity. There needs to be obviously a greater level of support for this to actually succeed.
I don't think it's exclusively a regulatory challenge. Absolutely, having a government that is pro small business and pro entrepreneurship is important. And I think that there is a growing realization within our political ranks that that is a necessary part of any successful future for South Africa. And so I have hopes. But it's equally a bunch of other factors which aren't in the gift of the regulator. It's in the gift of the community and the society that we operate in. A classic case in point, and some of the research that we've done has shown that getting quick payment for small businesses is absolutely essential to their well-being. You know, just imagine being a startup where your life savings are invested in your business and you don't get paid for 120 days. It's a nightmare. And that kind of nightmarish environment is often the case. So can we, working with others, imagine a way to provide cash flow to those businesses quicker? Now, in the big world, in the multinational world, there's factoring and there is all sorts of clever tricks to get your money earlier. But how do you extend that to the small and medium-sized space? How do you extend that to the entrepreneur? And we're looking at things, ways to help in that regard. That's some of the stuff that the South Africa Future Trust 2.0 is doing that isn't so much in the public domain. It's in the engine room of making an environment where entrepreneurialism can prosper. Likewise, in managing information, many small businesses and entrepreneurs aren't actually well equipped to deal with information and handle information and look at the cost of information. And so if you can find ways to create cheaper, more available access to information, you know, free Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi at a significantly reduced cost or mobile data at a significantly reduced cost and greater availability and more bandwidth, better ways to manage that within small businesses. If you can do that, then you really begin to create a tailwind. Equally, building trust between small businesses and their customers is really key. If we can do that, then we can really begin to create what in the South Africa Future Trust we're calling the hyperlocal community, where we know that trust ultimately drives quick transactions and drives financial security and stability. If you trust your neighbor, you can transact with them on multiple occasions and you don't need to produce legal documents running to the hundreds of pages and initial every corner and sign the last. You can do it on a handshake. And it's how do you create those environments and enable and support those environments so that you can create these hyperlocal spaces where trust is nearly automatic, where people interact with one another, build a complex society which is multifaceted, isn't only about business. I mean, different case in point, but one of the projects we're looking at is there a way to create ECD space, early childhood development space, and all the research shows that ECD is the most critical period in a human's life to set them up for success. Good ECD, high probability of success in later life. Bad ECD, bad probability of success in later life. And so how do we create intra-community ECD spaces which are trusted within the community, where those who have to leave the community to work can look back into that space, interact with the people providing the care, and even see that their child is being well looked after, being good, given good pedagogy, being good, being well nourished, and being in a clean environment. You know, if we have a Wi-Fi node that sits on an ECD center, which provides cheap Wi-Fi to the community, and as a quid pro quo, provides free access to people to be able to interact with the ECD center while they're away, what we're creating is a positive ecosystem where the community begins to know each other, trust each other, and participate with each other to create success. And so we really have a huge belief that this idea of hyperlocal communities, where people interact with one another, grow to trust one another, is at the very heart of the future of a prosperous, dynamic, exciting South Africa led by the small business community and our entrepreneurial spirit for our success.
Jonathan, when we look at these communities, it sounds very much like we are increasing their competitiveness, or at least their global competitiveness. And I wonder, when we look at that aspect of it from a business or even from a developmental point of view, your thoughts on some of the focus areas. Should we be looking into things that are driving the world at the moment? I mean, I think about things like AI and robotics and ensuring that our small businesses, even as we create these ecosystems, don't become stale ecosystems, but ecosystems that can drive the country into the next generation.
Yes, and not entirely. And why do I say that? Because I think being at the cutting edge is great, and the prospect of success is huge. But it also means that you're competing with a global ecosystem that is equally hungry to outcompete you. And much of the modern technology isn't particularly geographically bound. You know, having an AI engine developed by somebody in an entrepreneurial startup in South Africa is not going to easily compete with OpenAI that has had a couple of $100 billion thrown at it in the US with some of the smartest brains being recruited from around the world. At the same time, if we can actually develop true deep expertise in different sectors, we can absolutely dominate in that. And I'll give you a really interesting example. I was in China a month ago, and there was a particular manufacturer that I visited in, I can't even remember where it was, Huangzhou, I think, which is one of the sort of second or third tier cities. And they do the electrodes for the anodes and cathodes and lithium ion batteries. And these guys had developed a technology which would allow them to use less metal and to be more, to be safer, and to also in the same breath produce actually better current flow. So it was a win-win-win. And their ambition in making something that has been around for 150 years was to gain global dominance and global market share. We can do the same in South Africa. That's not in a fancy tech industry, but it is absolutely playing into tech. So I don't think we're limited to going to compete with the other bleeding edge things. I believe we can, and we do produce global expertise that does. But at the same breath, I don't think we have to limit ourselves to saying we have to go out there and compete in these SaaS environments and the likes. Because actually there is a lot that the real economy needs, which it hasn't got, and you can build really great businesses in servicing the real economy.
Jonathan, speaking about that real economy, I want to get your thoughts on ideas for attracting investment into that real economy. I mean, obviously, we've seen a lot of different forms of that economy over the last couple of years with all the challenges that have persisted. But there is still clearly a need for this real economy to exist. And I want to get your thoughts on how we get investment into that real economy.
It's a global challenge. It's not just a South African challenge, but think about it this way. Since 2008 and the global financial crisis, the world has printed something like $50 trillion of new capital. The scary part is less than $5 trillion of that new capital, so less than 10% of the money that's been printed has actually flowed into the real economy. The vast majority of it has flowed into stocks and bonds, which has inflated their prices and goes some way to explain why share prices are so high today. What we need to do is actually find ways to get that $50 trillion into the real economy and grow the number of goods and services we produce so that our citizens actually can buy stuff, which is truly globally competitive and makes them feel like tomorrow is going to be better than today. So I'll give you an interesting example. Again, when I was in China, I met with some solar and wind generating experts, and they looked me in the eye and with complete conviction said, we can produce solar and wind at one to one and a half cents per kilowatt hour. Right now here in South Africa, I think Eskom is selling at about 12 cents per kilowatt hour. Sorry, that's in US dollars. If you buy solar in the UK right now, you would pay about 16 cents per kilowatt hour. And the government then subsidizes that 16 cents back to about 10 cents by taking money from the taxman and giving it to the generator. It's just nuts. So you can actually build solar and wind energy, which is renewable, which is the kind of energy we want to transform our economy, with good profit margin at 2 cents per kilowatt hour life cycle cost. And yet, the actual cost of building it, even in a country like the UK, forget what we're doing here in South Africa, is 12 to 14 cents per kilowatt hour. And you've got to say why. And there are a whole bunch of reasons why. And if we can work together to move from 14 cents per kilowatt hour down to 2, then we can transform our energy environment from a coal-based, hydrocarbon-based environment to a green-based environment. We can reduce the cost of goods and services that are electricity intensive for our citizens dramatically, and we can embrace other new technologies to become even more productive. So there are wonderful ways to do this, but it requires a combined collective effort of both the regulator and the operator. And there has to be a belief that you can consume businesses to regenerate and reinvent businesses. And again, I love reading books about economic development. One of the key that I've read, which just sticks with me, is the great growth in importance of the United States was built on the back of creative destruction. You would create a business, it would be world-class, and then the next business would come along and consume that business and replace it with something better, cheaper, and more efficient and of better quality. We need to embrace that. We mustn't look to protect our existing businesses at all costs. We must look to creative destruction. We must look to our entrepreneurs. We must look to our small businesses to disrupt and change the environment such that every product that we produce is greener and cheaper than the product that it replaces. And that way we can produce more of it so that our citizens have greater and greater choice and a prospect of having a better future, while actually minimizing and reducing our impact on the planet. So I'm a great believer that there's an answer out there. Achieving that answer, now that's a much longer conversation, and it's complex and it's difficult, but it is doable.
Everything is doable. Jonathan, I want to quickly look at sustainability. Obviously, this is something that you're touching on here, is to say beyond just what we're creating, we also need to think about going forward. And I suppose this comes down to a succession planning and a legacy kind of mindset. And it's no secret that from a family perspective, I mean, from your great-grandfather down to your grandfather, to your father, to you, this has been something that's been ingrained in almost how you were brought up. How do we translate that kind of mindset into the kinds of businesses that we built? How did you do it? How did growing up in the family environment that you did force you to think about not just one generation?
I think it's about thinking about it's thinking about living organisms and actually following what I call biomimicry. And I don't know if you ever saw the movie Supersize Me, but for those who didn't, it's a movie, it's a documentary which embraces an individual who basically followed himself through the course of a year eating only at McDonald's. And the end result of that journey to eat through only at McDonald's is the man ended up obese and malnourished at the same time and ended up in hospital. And that, I think, is an analog which is equally true for the world that we live in today. We represent a tiny proportion of the living organisms on the world. And yet human beings are the single largest consumer by a massive margin. And in the way we do it, we use commercial processes which love standardization. And as a consequence, we have very few products that we use to feed ourselves. You know, if you think about the proteins we eat beef, we eat pork, we eat sheep, we eat chicken, we eat some fish, and that's about it. But if you actually look out in terms of living organisms, there is a whole suite. If you think about the carbohydrates we eat maize, we eat grain, and very limited number of grains, we eat rice. And again, there's something like 10,000 edible grains in the world. We don't embrace diversity, and what we're finding as people study the human being, the body, and I would say that's just an analogy for the world as at large, is that actually diversity in our body, and particularly in our gut biome, is directly correlated to our health and our resilience and our robustness. What we're doing at a global scale is we're reducing the diversity that we have, reducing our resilience to disease, reducing our ability, the Earth's resilience to shocks. And the Earth consequently is getting ill and has got a temperature because of it, and that's climate change. And the solution isn't to give the Earth a panado to reduce its temperature. The solution is to embrace a more diverse, a holistic approach which looks to preserve biodiversity and ecological difference, which creates the resilience so that we can face the future together. And we can do that in a way that actually makes less impact on the world, and in the same breath offers much greater choice for people to disrupt, to create, to build, and to explore, and make us more interesting people in the process. So yeah, I believe that these things are intrinsically and inextricably linked. And you know, maybe it was my mother, maybe it was my father, I think more my mother most probably, who basically beat holism into me from a young age. And it's something that I truly would go to the mat on. Holistic approach, which is integrated and integrating of all different factors, is absolutely critical to our long-term well-being. And we need to do that with a great deal of urgency, and we need to do it with a great deal of mindfulness.
Jonathan, as we close the conversation, I want to look at another area of just holistic approach and sustainability and welfare, and that's the work that you do with the Tswalu Kalahari Reserve. I mean, obviously, being the largest private wildlife reserve, it's definitely a mammoth task to run something like that, but that's clearly something that's very, very close to your heart. And I want to get your sense on just what that project started out as meaning to you and what it is now.
So it started as the most extraordinary place to embrace and restore my soul and the family's soul. It's truly an amazing, beautiful big space, but it's equally an opportunity to try and walk the talk that we've just had. It's a space where we are trying to balance preservation of ecology and the well-being of the communities around us. And to do that, we have to maximize the revenue that the reserve creates in a sustainable way. We have to preserve the ecological diversity, and we need to find a way to maximize that revenue. And all the studies we've done says high-end tourism is the best way to do that. So we are embracing a high-end tourism approach to maximize the revenue, but we're also embracing a huge number of research projects to better understand the ecology and understand how we can preserve that ecology. We are also trying to think about what this will look like in a sustainable way, given that the Swalu is in the Kalahari, and the Kalahari is known as a desert dune felt for those who are interested. And desert dune felt is not only one of the most fragile ecosystems we have in South Africa, it's also one of the most dynamically changing. And so if we can find a model that makes Swalu long-term sustainable for generations, maximizing the income generating capability for the community we operate in, and providing a holistic approach for those who live on our reserve, and we can do that while preserving the ecology and ensuring that its well-being is secured for the future, then we've begun to prove a model that can be translated to easier operating environments away from such a fragile ecosystem. So it's part and parcel of an integrated approach to this idea that you can use every life experience to enhance another. And that's basically the family way.
Using every life experience to enhance the other. I think that's the perfect note to leave this conversation on. Thank you so much for the time, Jonathan, and for your insights. That's Jonathan Oppenheimer, Executive Chair at Oppenheimer Generations, joining me to reflect on entrepreneurship, sustainability, and leaving a legacy.